One of the most frustrating things about Bristol is its drugs problem. Rumours abound that St Paul's is one of the cheapest places in the country to score hard drugs such as heroin and crack cocaine. Most people see Class A drugs, like these, as causing the biggest problems in the city, through these drug users' links to violent crime, robbery and burglary. But the Association of Chief Police Officers are making moves in the opposite direction. They're focusing on cannabis as the biggest problem and making moves to up cannabis's category from Class C to Class B.
My name is Steve Barker and I'm a spokesman for the Legalised Cannabis Alliance, and I also run a telephone helpline for people who get arrested for cannabis offences called the Cannabis Legal Support Service. Originally, when cannabis was put into Class C in 2004, the police supported this because it regularised something that was happening irregularly, which was sometimes they let people off who were found in possession of cannabis, sometimes they'd arrest them, sometimes they'd give them a caution. There was no straight-through policy. This was to standardise that policy, and in the original guidelines, the police, the ACPO guidelines, they said that personal possession of cannabis would no longer be an arrestable offence, although in actual practice, most people who are found by police to be in possession of cannabis are given a caution. But a caution itself is no longer counts as an offence, so it would not count against your employment record, for example.
What other implications are there if it goes to Class B, say, for example, for people who are dealing in cannabis or growing cannabis?
Well, when they move cannabis into Class C, they up the penalties for Class C production and supply to what they were under Class B. So in a report put out by the Institute of Criminal Policy Research on policing cannabis in Class C basically said nothing very much had changed. Now, the reason that is given by the police and the people who are talking about putting it back into Class B is that they think that a lot of kids are using cannabis under the impression that it's legal. What they're not considering is that the government's own figures have shown that the use of cannabis, since it was put into Class C, has gone down by 25%. Now, in most businesses, this would be considered to be a considerable success. What we're saying is that some kids were actually taking cannabis because it was illegal, and we would predict that if they put it back into Class C, use amongst young people is going to go up because they see it as a blow against the empire. Some people say that the police are actually chasing arrest targets and conviction targets, and if they recriminalise cannabis, this means they get better figures.
So what you're saying is the more things that the police can criminalise, the better their figures at the end of the year, the more arrests, and they're getting these kind of targets up.
I don't blame the police for this, but this is a way that policing is going. They're not actually looking at solving social problems. They are actually looking at getting figures up. So what this means is that not just cannabis, but all drugs convictions, they become like currency within the criminal justice industry. And, of course, a lot of people make money out of drug convictions, the solicitors, the police, the private prison industry.
There is another side to all this, of course, and that is one of the most controversial things here in Bristol, in the inner city, is that there are parts of the inner city where there is hard drug dealing going on of heroin and crack cocaine. And many people drive past these places day after day and they see deals going on in the street, and yet the police don't act. Now, the reason for that, the police tell us, is that they want to keep paid informers to be informing the police on these places rather than closing them down.
There was a lady, an elderly lady in the north of England who was arrested, a medical cannabis user, who actually went into the police station, spoke to a senior police officer and says, why are you paying money to hard drug dealers to report medical cannabis users and allowing them continue to operate? And the police officer said, cannabis dealers don't give us the information we want. This is followed up by another letter from a representative of the Legalised Cannabis Alliance to Vic Hogg, who is a senior representative of the Home Office, who looked into this, and he came back and said, the police said that this is procedure. This is policy.
So it's actual policy because the police aren't getting, what they say, is enough information from cannabis users about who's using drugs and who's dealing drugs, that they're actually keeping these illegal crack dens and heroin dealing areas open in order to get information. But what about the ethics of that?
Well, there's a case of two brothers who were brought into the country, I can't remember their names offhand, from Turkey, on the basis of the fact that they were supposed to be giving information to the intelligence services who are responsible for monitoring drug importation. They were brought into the country. They wound up being the biggest hard drug dealers and biggest heroin dealers in the country. They're both now in prison, one in Holland and one in this country. So this was done with government money. The situation is that the police are actually being drawn into turf wars. There's no doubt about this at all. The smart dealers who know who to pay off in the police and how to get bent results are actually operating with impunity and in exchange for selling the names and addresses of their clients to the police.
But if they're selling the names and addresses of their clients to the police, surely those clients are going to be being arrested and they're knocking down their client base. You know, it seems very strange to allow a dealer to continue to operate just so long as he supplies you names and addresses, because he's going to surely eventually run out of people to be selling drugs to.
Well, you're now talking about demand and supply and market forces within the illegal drug world. I wouldn't like to comment on their marketing policy, but they obviously take that into account.
Is there any way you think that local people can campaign for hard drug dens to be closed down whilst the police are still paying informers to sort of keep an information flow going?
Well, there's a lot of people involved in the campaign to legalise cannabis who are former hard drug users who have found that use of cannabis has actually helped them to stay off hard drugs, stay off alcohol, and in some cases give up tobacco smoking. So the issue is, what are the effects of social cannabis use? Well, cannabis users, on the whole, are non-violent. Cannabis is not addictive, and it doesn't have any serious health problems. When you consider there are different ways you can take cannabis, you can take it in food, you can smoke it through a sort of inhaler that turns it into vapor. You can smoke it through a bong that takes out some of the toxics, water. Smoker. There's various different ways you can take cannabis, and most cannabis users are recreational ones. There's a lot of people in the country who use cannabis for medical reasons. They suffer depression or they suffer physical pain, and they are using it to reduce the symptoms of those things. So actually, cannabis use is actually saving the government and the health service money. But of course, we're not getting this argument.
Steve Barker there, who's the spokesman for the Legalised Cannabis Alliance, talking to me about proposals from the Association of Chief Police Officers to upgrade cannabis from a Class C drug to a Class B drug, and giving us an insight into how the police's use of paid informers keeps crack and heroin dealers in business.